This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. 10 years ago this month, a college radio station in Chapel Hill made news around the world.
WXYC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, USA. It is Radiosignal per Internet weltweit.
Yeah, that's a Swiss guy. And that was November 7th, 1994. WXYC at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill became the first radio station in the world to broadcast its signal on the Internet. In the days before Google and Napster became household names, the public was just discovering the Internet. In the mid-90s, people still disagreed about how the World Wide Web would be used and what it was capable of. Well, today we broadcast and share music all over the world through Internet radio and other digital technology. This hour, we're going to talk about that. Do you find yourself listening to Internet-only radio stations? Do you listen to broadcast stations on the Internet? Does our ability to share music on the Internet enrich our musical choices? Or does it lead to some kind of bland globalization that could be homogenization? We'll take in your calls this hour at 877-962-9862. Joined this hour by two former students at UNC Chapel Hill who put WXYC on the web. Mike Schaffner was a DJ at WXYC in the mid-90s, now a systems administrator at UNC, joins us in the studio. Welcome, Mike.
Glad to be here.
David McConville is a grad student and speechless, a radio guy. That's great.
We'll get David to interpret for me whatever I say. He'll translate.
The David is David McConville, a grad student who worked on some of the legal and technical aspects of the simulcast, now co-founder of Black Box Studios in Asheville, joins us from the studios of WCQS in Asheville. David, welcome.
Mountains.
David, I'm going to start with you because I know that you're there. What was the genesis of this? Why did you take this radio station to the Internet? What was the thought in 94?
Well, it was a pretty unique opportunity in that technically there was something that hadn't been done. And at the same time, there were a lot of intellectual property issues involved with actually doing it. So it presented a challenge to actually do it technically and at the same time present in legal language what the ramifications might be. And we happened to have the infrastructure, an incredible radio station that it was the first time I'd ever really been around a good radio station that really tailored to the types of music I liked. So we had this great convergence of events that just all happened at the right time. And so I was working at Sunsite, and Paul and Mike was at WXYC, and we just kind of teamed up and started throwing ideas around and managed to do it.
All right, so David is talking about some of the technical concerns, some of the legal concerns. But, Mike, what's the creative vision here? I mean, did you see this as something of a frontier in broadcasting or just a cool thing to do?
Well, we definitely saw it as a frontier in broadcasting. And once we had kind of hit upon the idea, we decided, hey, we better get this thing rolling. We better do it quickly because somebody else will do it. And it's just something that's too good to let pass. And as it turns out, that has been the case. I think we were right in the vision, and I'm just glad that we actually executed in time to get there first and kind of lead the way and open the door for a lot of what's followed.
We should talk a little bit too about the Internet at the time. This is the mid-90s. We didn't really have search engines, did we, and user interfaces and all that. So did you have to invent your own technology for this kind of streaming that we've had, or was there stuff available?
There wasn't much available. And in fact, David did a lot of the technical side of it, and he did a good job of finding some tools to actually get this thing together in the time frame that we did it in. And yeah, at the time there was very little out there. Obviously there's no Google, no Napster. This was years before most people had even seen a web browser. So we weren't even webcasting at that point. It wasn't called that. It was just simply a simulcast of our own air radio signal, but using a mechanism that would allow people to connect, actually using a free video conferencing piece of software, the audio side of that. So we basically kind of hacked it together and
yeah, and David McConville, I've heard a little bit of the discussion about this in that there were other radio stations that were trying to get to do the same thing, but they were essentially inventing their own technology, and you'd been able to pull some things together. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. There were a number of things going on at the time. There was a kind of a high bandwidth backbone to the Internet being used by researchers called the MBone, or the multimedia backbone at the time. And there were a lot of folks doing kind of brief broadcasts of performances and some video and things. And what we had tapped into was a program called CUCME that actually allowed us to run what was called a reflector at the time at Sunsite, now iBiblio, where people could log in from all over the world and essentially see and video conference with people from wherever. So most of the time when you would log on, it would be, you know, people at other research institutions around. And we thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool to actually use the audio component of that video conferencing software to actually retransmit WXYC 24/7. There were some amazing efforts going on at the time, specifically with WREK down in Atlanta, where they were actually developing their own code and their own tools to broadcast their station, and they came online shortly after we did. And, you know, there were a number of people that kind of all had this, you know, epiphany around the same time, and it was just a matter of different approaches that people were taking.
Well, you mentioned iBiblio, and Paul Jones is with us. He's at the internet-based company now. And, Paul, you also helped get WXYC, that simulcast, up and running, and we talked a little bit about the legal difficulties. Were you aware at the time that this was going to have present a legal challenge?
Well, unfortunately, we actually were, or we would have been online probably 4 or 5 months earlier.
That was the problem. Huh?
And in fact, for us to put something resembling radio on the internet would have been quite easy, because we're a research group, and iBiblio, by the way, is not a company; it's a part of the University of North Carolina, and shared by three different units of the university. But we'll pass on that for a second. The real challenge here was to do it right and legally, and to understand where the emerging, well, the law hadn't emerged yet because no one had really done it. We really knew that it wasn't okay to put a stack of your CDs on and play them over the M-bone, although that occasionally happened. We really wanted to conserve the bandwidth of the internet, and so we chose a very low bandwidth application, CUCME, and turned off the high bandwidth portion, which was the video.
And we should stop right there. One of the interesting differences between radio and the web, webcasting, is that it doesn't matter how many people are listening to WUNC right now, will not affect the signal. On the other hand, if we all tune into the webcast at the same time, the signal will be affected.
That's true. More listeners take more bandwidth. And this was a big concern at the time. And in fact, we had email from I was participating also in some discussions about the future of multimedia on the internet with the Internet Engineering Task Force, IETF, and Brad Templeton, who's now, ironically or interestingly enough, the head of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, wrote me a burning message about how if we put radio like this on the internet, then any idiot could put a radio on the internet, and then, of course, Armageddon would follow, and I guess we're close in both directions.
Well, it sure has happened in radio and broadcast, so why not on the internet? But a big part of the problem was the concern, the technical problem, in other words, that the internet itself would crash with all this, you know, simultaneous use?
Brett, the engineers' problems were that hundreds of people would come on and listen to the internet, and that isn't what the internet was intended for. And in fact, if you listen to the rest of the Swiss broadcast that you had there, the transcript, which is on the WXYC site, WXYC.org. Part of the point of that broadcast was first that it was happening, but second, an engineer from the university there saying, this is very bad for the internet. Mm-hmm. It should only be for research. It shouldn't be for frivolous things like entertainment. And you hear Johnny Cash playing in the background, which I think they kind of needed some of that in Russia. I mean, in Switzerland.
Switzerland, yeah.
But yes, so there was that set of concerns. Then there were also the legal concerns, which you wanted me to get to, and I'll try to get to now. The problem was that no one knew what it meant to broadcast outside of your service area if you did it on the internet, for example. No one knew what happened when you repurposed the intellectual property in that way. Don't forget that we couldn't get more than 30, 40, 50 listeners probably. So it's pretty minuscule. On the other hand, people were terrorized because something new was going on that they didn't know. And we also had four lawyers at the station. The station was over-lawyered at that point.
There were quite a few.
And,
which was handy. It was very good.
Yeah, it turns out.
Yeah. We needed them all on the time frame we were on. So.
Or we could have just ignored them. But the problem with ignoring good, smart lawyers like that would have been that XYZ licenses could have been in danger. And we as a research group doing it, we weren't much in danger, but XYZ was, and we did care about that.
Yeah, we had a lot to lose because as a student-run station, we really don't have much budget, and we had really very low risk tolerance, quite honestly. And so the station management was concerned about the legal issues, and we had ASCAP and BMI to think about, and you know, they're not known for being
particularly lenient.
Yeah. Right. So so we had to think about that, but luckily some folks at the station, Jeff Robbins, Bill Burton did some stuff, Jay Huber, Pat Anders, they all chipped in and really pushed this forward, because those guys had full-time jobs and whatnot, as well as their volunteer activities at the station. So really we had to It was quite a tense period just to see if we could get it all coordinated.
Yeah, I think we would have probably been on 3 or 4 months earlier. One of the we did really have to draw some analogies there, and so we made university stations have certain little outlets they can do. They can do certain experimental things, and so we appeal to that. University stations do something are allowed to do something that called carrier current, which you may have heard of. That means rather than broadcast as a radio, they broadcast on the electric current lines.
Right. And so you're not broadcasting over the air and not subject to the same FCC regulations. We'll talk a little bit more about this on the State of Things, talking about the 10th anniversary of live streaming radio on the Internet, joined by systems analyst and former WXYC DJ Mike Schaffner, David McConville, who's the founder of Black Box Studio in Asheville, and Paul Jones, the director of iBiblio. Taking your calls at 877-962-9862. Just ahead, get your calls and talk to a couple of musicians as well who collaborated on the Internet. All that's part of our discussion on the State of Things. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, listeners who support WUNC. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. This month marks the 10th anniversary of live streaming on Internet radio. WXYC, UNC Chapel Hill's college radio station, was the first in the world to broadcast their local signal to a global audience via the web. And then 10 years since, Internet radio has expanded along with newcomers to the field, satellite radio, new technologies like podcasting and others. We're talking today about the growth of Internet radio and how its influences and how it has influenced musical genres and musical taste. Joining us in the studio are former WXYC DJ and now systems analyst at UNC Chapel Hill, Mike Schaffner, joined by phone by David McConville, who is founder of Black Box Studios in Asheville, and Paul Jones is here, director of iBiblio at UNC. And we're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. How has the Internet and the technology and webcasting and broadcasting and music sharing affected you? Do you listen to radio on the web? Do you share music? Give us a call at 877-962-9862. David McConville, is this the kind of thing that could only have happened or started at college radio because of the special rules we were talking about before the break?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of contributing factors, because at the time at Sunsight, we were really being encouraged to experiment in all kinds of ways, and it really was sort of an open-ended field dealing with early Internet technologies. And I doubt that we could have done it with, you know, a commercial station or, you know, a really well-funded station, because XYC, by its very nature, is very experimental. And I think they were willing to go with us and take some chances. It took some convincing, but I find it hard to believe it would have happened under many other different circumstances. I mean, for instance, most of the other stations that also went online around the same time were all college radio stations. So I think it was really the right environment for it. It was also against a backdrop. We were doing a lot of other things with early audio encoding, and we were putting some of the first record labels online and having the first music archives. It was really, you know, the pre-Napster days when these types of things were just being discovered and developed, and people were really figuring out the utility that the Internet could have for both archiving and downloading as well as streaming audio.
Well, on the creative side, Mike Schaffner, did this have any impact on the DJs at WXYC or the management? I mean, were you aware of the fact that you're now talking to the world?
Well, it was sort of a non-event in some ways. Things went on the way they had before in terms of the programming and whatnot. People did know about it, and what was actually interesting is we started getting email from these disparate places all over the world, and that's really when the impact started to settle in. We started seeing that sort of thing.
But did it have any impact? So it didn't really change the programming, the music, or the way you approached the radio station?
Not as such, but we were having requests coming in from Europe and from various Asia and various other places, so that was probably the biggest
So they were listening. There was an appetite for it. Well, in the 10 years since WXYC first broadcast its signal on the radio, Internet has become much more common. There are many stations now that broadcast only on the Internet. One of those stations is Radio Paradise. This week, the station set a new record for itself. Over 7,200 people tuned in all at once. Bill Goldsmith has run the web-only radio station out of his home in Paradise, California, since February of 2000. And he joins us now. Welcome, Bill.
Well, hi. Thanks for having me.
You had a successful, it was a pleasure to have you. You had a successful career in regular FM commercial radio. Now, what made you go to the Internet?
Well, commercial radio over the course of the 1980s and 1990s just evolved in a way that left it so far away from what attracted me to the business in the first place that I just could literally no longer stomach being part of it. I grew up with a love of radio, with an appreciation for the art of radio, and by the 1990s, commercial radio had become about money and money only, and I just couldn't see being a part of that anymore. And I've been watching the internet radio thing happen. I was involved with internet radio at an FM station that I was working for at the time. We were actually the first commercial FM station to go on the web in 1995, and so I had watched that evolve, and by 1999, 2000, it really looked like things had come along to the point where the internet was ready to support a station like the one that I envisioned.
There are still licensing requirements, and that means costs involved for anybody who wants to do broadcasting over the webcasting, I guess. Does that in any way inhibit the freedom that you have to play whatever it is you want?
No, not at all. I'm able to play anything because I'm paying blanket royalties to cover any copyright.
Are you able to get around the restrictions on the playlist? Like, for example, you can't do an entire hour, say, of Pink Floyd or Britney Spears or even Little Brother, unless Little Brother lets you.
No, I'm not able to get around those restrictions. And as it happens, those restrictions kind of fall into line with my programming philosophy anyway. So I don't really see that as a big issue.
Well, how about the other economics, Bill? Is it generally cheaper to run internet radio than FM?
Well, as far as ongoing operating costs go, no, not particularly. Internet radio, gets more and more expensive as you're more and more successful, which is not the case with FM. But in terms of getting into it in the first place,
it gets more expensive as you get more successful, and why is that?
Because I'm having to cover the cost of the bandwidth used by each individual user. If somebody tunes into an FM station, that doesn't cost the FM station anything. It doesn't matter. An FM transmitter costs the same to operate whether one person is listening or 100,000 people. But an internet stream is a very different story, and we need to pay for the bandwidth that's used up by our audience.
Do you see it going the same way as commercial radio? Do you see eventually the same pressures coming to bear on the internet, and it's going to end up being the same old thing?
Well, no, I really don't. I really don't, because on the internet there's room for some pretty extreme specialization, and there's not the you're not competing. There's not a limited number of stations competing for a limited number of listeners, like there is, like is the case in any given FM radio market. There's room for an unlimited number of stations, and a phenomenally large pool of listeners to pull from. So there's not the kind of cutthroat competition between the stations that happens on FM.
Right, and like you said before, the barrier to entry is really low. Anybody in principle can just do this technologically, even though they have the hurdles to deal with legally.
Yeah.
So. Do you find the reporting restrictions tougher? Not-for-profits like college radio don't have to report.
You're talking about reporting the music that you're playing?
You don't report just music, but there's a lot more. There's about 16 data items per play.
Well, I'm covered under an agreement that that requires me to produce a much less detailed report.
Okay, so that's not the blanket agreement then. That's not the standard CARP decision, but
no.
A negotiated decision.
No, I'm covered under something called the SWSA, Small Webcasters Settlement Agreement.
Right.
Back in 2002.
Is that up for renewal in the next year, I think?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much. Bill Goldsmith is the co-owner of Radio Paradise. It's an internet-only radio station. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Talking today about internet radio, its impact on music, its impact on radio, and its impact on you. Give us a call, 877-962-9862. Paul Jones, director of iBiblio. There have been a number of technological changes. All the fears about bandwidth and the other initial fears, of course, were met by the technology. So now we have an explosion, and there are all new ways to listen on the radio. Tell us about some of those.
Well, one of the big questions is always, is this radio and to what extent? Radio is really radiant broadcast out of a tower and therefore compliant to the FCC. So we try not to use the word radio too much for some of the other ways to distribute things because we'd like to keep the FCC's fingers out of
right.
it. Podcasting is one way that lets you signal people when you have a new MP3 uploaded, and then it can subscribe to basically to your website, and it can show up in your iPod or iTunes.
But you have to have some kind of wireless or some internet connection.
Well,
nearby.
Some internet connection at one time. But what it does is you come home at night, you fire up your podcasting thing. You can see who has the latest MP3 shows. You can select the ones you want. They get dumped into your pod, and then if you go out jogging or go to the club or driving around and hit your car radio, then or don't have satellite, you can listen to whoever's put it there. And this is something that's really exploded since September. You know, there are tens of thousands of links to it in Google, and there are many, many listeners.
Well, you talked about some interesting kind of personal radio, people-to-people kinds of technology, too.
Right. Another really neat technology in which person-to-person radio sort of links up to something like Friendster, so you can meet people that are playing the same music that you want, and that is entirely legal and that enforces the playlist and that pays the artist, is a company out of California called Mercaro, MERCARO. And they've also co-branded with Grokster, which is just one of a bunch of file-sharing lawsuits they've come out on top. This is completely legal. Basically, you build your playlist. It enforces this repetition that we talked about with Mr. Goldsmith. And Mercaro pays the artist and pays the fees and pays the licenses. You put up your playlist. You can find other people's playlists to listen to. You can put up a little picture. You can have a blog. You can have IM. You can have a personal profile.
I share my own music, and somebody else is paying the cost, the royalty cost.
They're paying it through basically Google AdSense words. And they also they also sell back to the record. They go to the record company and say, people are listening to these things. Do you want to buy a link back to this artist's site so they can know more about it? Do you want to buy a link to the video, music video? You can use this to promote your artist, and
Mike?
That's their income stream.
Yeah, Mike?
Yeah, so you don't pay anything, and at least right now, if you're on the service. And it's kind of interesting just because it's sort of the old internet, halcyon days of the internet business models, but actually coming back around in a reasonable way. So, you know,
people have finally figured it out after.
Right. Petrock.com kind of things right. Exactly. They figured it out, and we're not seeing that again. So it's good to see something sustainable that's actually kind of a win for everybody, or it looks to be at this point.
Let's go to the phones. Martin is on the line from Raleigh. Martin?
Yes. I've tried to listen to the internet radio for a number of years now, and the problem has been the restrictions that have been placed on the commercial stations. Now, I'm in the software security business, and one of the things somebody in Sweden is working on is an RSS technology that they use for streaming text, and they're going to apply that to streaming voice as well. So these stations will be able to stream a show like yours, and then when you connect your iPod or whatever device you want to listen to, the show's been downloaded to your iPod.
And we're going to have to improve cell phone technology, too.
Sorry, that's right.
Martin, we lost you.
what he's talking about is podcasting,
yeah,
which I mentioned earlier. And we have actually a link to some resources about that and some podcasting stations on ibiblio.org, lio.org. And so this does use this technique, which he calls real RSS, or real simple syndication. So it lets you sign up and asynchronously, this is the big deal, time shifting for your iPod. You don't have to wait until somebody puts it on. And we've got at least four shows there, including Roger McGuinn releases, has for the last 10 years, recorded a different song, a different American folk song every month, and put them up for download on the internet, and we're podcasting that. The most recent one is kind of interesting because it has two non-traditional musicians, Dave Barry, that Dave Barry, and Ridley Pearson, who writes murder mysteries, and the two of them together have also written a Peter Pan prequel. But they're doing
Roger.
It's not, the music is not as scary as it sounds. These guys actually turned out Roger makes them be good musicians, I think, and Dave actually harmonizes despite himself.
I was going to say some of the greatest fears about the internet are about to be realized, Paul.
That's right.
If you keep going with this way, but it does suggest some of the possibilities of collaboration. And very recently, our own Fonte Coleman, right here from Raleigh. Remember, Little Brother has collaborated. Welcome to the show, Fonte.
Thanks for having me, man. Thanks a lot. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back, and now you've gone global since the last time you were on this program. You collaborated with a Dutch musician, mm-hmm. right, Nicolay Rook, and came out with an album, I guess you call it the group Foreign Exchange.
The Foreign Exchange, and the name of the album is Connected.
It's Connected. So right. Tell us a little bit about this, because, you know, it's interesting. Tell us how you met and how the... a project came about.
Okay. I was a big fan of OKPlayer.com. OKPlayer is this website for a big music discussion website that features The Roots, D'Angelo, Talib Kweli, Common, you know what I'm saying? And so just a bunch of like-minded hip-hop and soul artists, and so a lot of the fans would go there to see it. And so there's a section on their message boards called The Lesson, which is like a big music discussion group. And every once in a while, people who post on the site would also post their own music. Mm-hmm. And so Nicolay was one of those producers who posted his music. And he put up a post. He was like, this is some of my music. You know, check it out. And I clicked on it and downloaded his couple of his just instrumental tracks. And I just thought they were incredible. And so, listened to him, hit him up via email saying, hey, would you think could I rhyme over some of these? Could I do some songs? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And so this was probably about 2 years ago when we first started. And we just worked on the album for like a year and a half, just exchanging files through Instant Messenger.
You never met?
Never met. Now, we met. I didn't meet him until after the album was done, like about a year and a half after the album was done. The contract was signed, like all of that. It was like that was when we finally met and sat down. So, it was just really just a testament to the power of music when just two people can just work together on something with no politics involved, no nothing. It's just like, look, man, I don't even know if I'm going to make a dollar off of this, but I just believe in your music so much. Let's just work and let's just see what we can do.
Let's hear a clip from Connected.
Definitely for the young youth of America in the greater North Carolina area, I must say. See, like getting them to speak in my church. College and boy. Somebody
said
the root ain't right, no one
to
know who it is.
Come on, man, Nicolay. We're gonna put it down like this, y'all. Check it out.
We just want to chill.
Fonte Coleman from Raleigh, North Carolina, and Nicolay.
Yeah, just Nicolay.
Nicolay from the Netherlands, collaborating on an LP called Connected that you did through the internet. And so I want to ask you, Paul and Mike, when you were putting your radio station on the air for the first time, did you imagine these kinds of collaborations, these kinds of possibilities as a result of that technology?
Personally, I didn't think of this specific case, but I guess we were... David probably thought of this, but...
that was a major motivator.
That's right.
Yeah.
Actually, was the idea of people being able to collaborate more easily, to have, downloadable audio files, especially for even other, broadcast radio stations, to be able to more easily distribute their audio so you could collaborate artistically, as well as to have a very pragmatic way to not have to necessarily set up a... set up a satellite to be able to get your feed. I'd done some work previously with some pirate radio stations, and I thought that it would be a really great way to prove that we could encode audio files from anywhere in the world and send them all over the place, which was recently kind of proven when I was working with a low-power FM station up here in Asheville, and they download their daily news feeds in MP3 format from all over the world. So it's been really great to see it come full circle.
In fact, North Carolina public radio stations do this too with MP3s via our site. At the time, we were beginning to work with some other people doing experimental stuff, particularly a band called Negative Land, that they're often not all in the same place. And David was particularly buddies with Mark Hostler. And more recently, while we're on this, David and Mark Hostler were among the people that worked on the Creative Commons sampling and sampling plus licenses that you saw music released under these licenses most recently in the latest issue of Wired, in which people like Public Enemy and David Byrne put out albums that put out songs that you can sample from, you can remix, you can change, you can sing along with, you can take the parts you want and remake and reuse. And David is one of the people responsible for that.
A lot of possibilities. We have been talking about internet radio in the early days of the internet. We're going to continue our conversation with Fonte Coleman and Nicolay to talk more about their collaboration. But first, I want to thank my guests from WXYC, or at least those who helped put it on the web, Paul Jones, director of iBiblio, Mike Schaffner, a systems analyst at UNC, and Dave McConville, co-founder of Black Box Studio in Asheville. Congratulations, happy anniversary, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Fonte Coleman, staying with us. We'll talk more about musical collaborations and more of your calls at 877-962-9862 on The State of Things. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, joined by Fonte Coleman, MC of the North Carolina hip-hop group Little Brother, recently completed a project in which he exchanged music with his collaborator over the internet. Nicolay Rook lives in Amsterdam. Together, the two men produced the album Connected, without ever meeting face-to-face. Fonte Coleman here in the studio, and we want to welcome Nicolay Rook from Amsterdam. Hello, Nicolay.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. You heard Fonte describe, and we all did, how you came together on the internet. He hears the beats, comes back with some lyrics. What did you think when you saw the lyrics?
I saw them or heard them? Yeah. I guess heard them. I was blown away. It was the first time that I actually worked with vocalists, singers or MCs. So, it was a blessing for me to hear, the vocals on my beats and the end result being exactly what I would want it to be. So it was great.
Okay. So you say it was exactly what you would want it to be, but is that what you were expecting? Yeah. What were you thinking when you put it out there that might come back? Is that kind of what you had in mind?
I'm not sure. Basically, first and foremost, I was looking for some feedback on how I was doing musically. And I knew Fonte and the group Little Brother. I knew what they were doing. So by the time that he asked me to collaborate, I kind of knew what to expect. But it blew my mind regardless. So.
Fonte, you talked about being, using the service and listening to all kinds of music. I mean, had you heard anything up until you heard Nicolay's music that struck you as, possible for what you were doing?
I had heard like a lot of other producers who I thought were good producers, but I hadn't heard anyone who was able to just do all the many different types of music that Nicolay does and kind of just put them under one umbrella. You know what I'm saying? I mean, me and Nick both are just, our roots are in hip hop, but we also listen to a lot of classic rock, a lot of jazz, just a lot of old, 70s soul, and my record collection grows like every day, so I'm always buying a lot of music. So Nicolay was just the first producer I heard who was able to kind of just take all of my musical passions and just put them into one, and I hadn't heard any one producer do that.
I want to listen to another clip, Nicolay, and this one is called Nick's Groove. It has your name in the title. You want to tell it? Brave New World. We're going to hear from Brave New World. Let's hear it, and then we'll talk about it. Brave New World.
Yo, let's get it going like this. A foreign exchange style. Just some little something for y'all to vibe to. A little something to bounce to, rock to, whatever, Gotta talk about it. Gotta let y'all know what's going on in my life. A lot of people got questions. Just want to let you know what's going on in the world around me. This is how I see it. Yo.
We got single moms that can't afford to feed children. World War III got planes flying in the buildings. Corrupt cops and robbers, thieves and politicians. The just keep taking as the world keeps spinning. Just take a look around now. A long way from your MTV cribs with the Bose speaker surround sound. Get ready for countdown just to get some benefits. My girl lied to the people downtown. It's funny how we started.
Brave New World from the collaboration Connected. Fonte Coleman, my guest, along with Nicolay Rook in Amsterdam. Fonte, so you developed the rap after you heard the beat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Every time, how we would basically do it, he would just send me the track, and I would just listen to the beat and just kind of get a feel for what type of emotional connection that I made with the track. Did I want to just sing something crazy? Did I want to write something a little more emotional, a little more heartfelt, something a little more intimate? So that was pretty much it. It always starts, just as a writer, I always like to start with the music, because the music is like, that's like your emotional palette, I guess. Like, that's your canvas. So, you know, the music kind of guides you as to what you're going to paint over it. So,
now, you're used to working with a group. You have a group. You've developed your own music together, and that's where the passion came from. That's where the ideas came from. And you know each other personally. So what's it like to hear these ideas and be moved by somebody who you don't really know? You don't know the personality.
Man, it's really not a lot of difference. Truthfully, it's really not. It's just, I mean, because I thought about that too. Like, I was just be sitting like, man, I haven't even met this dude. And it's just, you know, but man, the music is just really just all about the power of the music, man. It's just, you know, you hear it, and I don't care if it came from France or Amsterdam, or you could have told me the dude was from Mars. I'd have been like, yo, but we need to call NASA, see if we can get him down here, because these beats is for real. Like, so, you know, it's really no difference, man. It's just all about the music. And he was just, I heard his beats and I knew he had his finger on something.
Nick, had you get other responses to your music from other groups or artists?
Slowly but surely, yeah. By now, actually, the first impression that I made on the OK Player board was great. I mean, it allowed me to meet Fonte, and over the time that Connected actually came out, there's been a lot of attention from both the audience as well as fellow artists, and it overall is just it's overwhelming. The critics are very enthusiastic.
Is there a way, what do you think is happening to the music here? We have certainly people from two different countries, so they're going to have different cultural backgrounds. The music is obviously, you know, we can hear it, it's whole, and it reaches us. Is what you're doing, is that changing the music, or is the music changing our ears? Are you bringing your culture to the music, or is there a whole new culture developing? Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Yeah, I see. Well,
we got time.
Oh, man. I think, well, just from my personal experience, I think I'm definitely bringing, you know, my culture to the music. I mean, that's the only way. To me, that's the way of a true artist, is to just speak from what you know and just to do you. Hopefully, you know, as far as me changing music, I don't really know if I'm changing music. I would just hope with this project we just change the way people look at music, if nothing else, just change the way. And, you know, just kind of like the whole thing of, like you were just saying earlier, was it different, you know, being in the studio with him and not meeting, you know what I'm saying? I just hope it just, this project can make people see, like, man, it's just all about the music. And just as long as that connection is there, the music can come from anywhere, you know what I'm saying? It's not really about just this traditional, let's all 10 of us go into the studio, you grab a trumpet and I'm gonna play drums. And, you know, it can just be, look, if producer A is dope and just happens to be from Spain, we got an internet connection, let's work, you know what I'm saying? And in the process, you learn about each other.
But those lyrics were very specific, and I would think very specific in some ways to an experience in an urban American environment.
Without
and
question.
Nick, you may not have experienced that. So was there any point in this project where you felt, you know, was there a back and forth? Did you have to go back and say, gee, you know, that really doesn't match the sentiment I had in mind?
No, not at all. I'm not a man of words, so it's not like I had a better verse written for him to do. of course there's a lot of influences for me as well, that music that I listen to daily, and most of that music is hip hop and is coming from the United States. So the whole cultural thing that Fonte brings along, I just completely understood it, or at least tried to understand everything about it and embrace that that part of the duo that we formed, basically.
Hip hop really is taking over the world. It is heard in every corner of the world.
Yeah. That's right.
Nick, let me ask you, from somebody who's in another corner of the world, what do you think is happening there?
Mm-hmm. Here?
Yeah, I mean, why is
what's
that happening
here?
Yeah, why is hip hop? Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think it's one of the most, it's one of the youngest musical styles. I think that plays a big part. I think it, right now, I mean, there's a difference for me between hip hop and rap, and a lot of very commercial music right now that is selling a lot of copies is actually rap. So, and, that's the music to me that you hear on the billboards and in the commercials and in the movies. I don't think hip hop is ever. Hip hop is as big as it was, and mm-hmm. it's just reaching a lot of more people now. Partly through the internet, through the fact that people can download stuff. That they wouldn't be able to buy in the record stores, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. But they've got a lot of choices, and they're choosing hip hop in a big way, and so that's kind of one of my questions.
Right. It's mainly, I think, you know, Europe is still very much focused on the United States. So a lot of kids over here growing up, middle-class kids, they tend to just listen to a lot of that stuff, man.
So by now you guys have met.
Yeah, we met. Yeah.
How'd that go? So describe that. When and where did that happen?
First time we met was in Amsterdam. We were touring. I was touring with Little Brother, and we had a tour stop in Amsterdam. And me and Nick, we actually, before we met, we'd actually had our first phone conversation like a week or two before that. And so I told him, like, yo, Nick, I'm coming to Amsterdam, man. We touring. I'll see you over there. So I came over, and I had seen pictures of him before, like, you know, on his website and stuff. And he had seen pictures of me in press releases and stuff. So we knew what each other looked like, but we had never heard each other or had never talked on the phone or whatever until like a week before. So I came into my hotel lobby and I saw like this big tall white dude. I was like, it's gotta be Nicolay. I was like, that's him. And so he turned around, he's like, yo, what's up, man? And so
actually in Amsterdam there are a fair number of big tall white dudes.
Oh yeah.
It turns out
he was the only tall white dude that made beats. And so I was like, all right,
okay. Besides I'm easily the tallest.
Yeah, exactly. So
were either of you worried that you might not like each other?
No, I wasn't. Yeah. I mean, it was just like, because again, like after a while, man, you know, with the music and the lyrics that I was writing, it was like very personal. So he pretty much knew me without having met me. I mean, music is just one of those things it's hard to keep yourself out of. So by the time we met me, it was just like we was old friends reconnecting. You know what I'm saying?
Right. What's the next project? Do you have one? A new project?
Yeah, next project is that we're working on right now is a singer, Darian Brockington. He's one of the singers that's featured on the Foreign Exchange album on a song called Come Around. He's also a Durham, a native of Durham. He went to school at Central. Me and him went to school together. And we're working on his album. And me and Nick are kind of overseeing that. Nick is doing a lot of the tracks, and I'm doing a lot of the songwriting and producing from a vocal aspect. So that's pretty much our next project that we have right now. We're about 10 songs deep into that already. Yeah. And then after that, I mean, we'll probably start another Foreign Exchange album. We just go with it, man. The work don't stop.
And Little Brother is a part of the whole project, or are you separate from Little Brother in these projects?
These projects, I am kind of separate from Little Brother, but we do incorporate, you know, like Big Pooh, my partner from Little Brother, we do incorporate him onto some songs on Connected. Also, Ninth Wonder did a lot of the mixing and, you know, the engineering recording on the Foreign Exchange album. So it's ultimately, it is me and Nick's project. It's me and Nick's baby, but we have a lot of help from our friends, to kind of paraphrase.
Pull it all together. Bringing in all genres here. Fonte Coleman, thank you very much.
Thanks, Nicolay
Rook, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
The two collaborated on the new album, Connected. We all know what's coming this Thursday. Turkey, stuffing, pumpkin pie, and a heaping helping of family dysfunction. Because let's face it, half the fun of the holidays is reminding ourselves why it's good to be from somewhere and why we're grateful for our own separate lives. On Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, the State of Things will be live talking about the ups and downs of spending the holidays with the family and taking your calls to hear your stories. As a preview, our producer, Stephanie Hirsch, offers her story of a recent Thanksgiving in her hometown of Philadelphia that went terribly awry.
The phone rings. It's my mom. "Are you coming home for Thanksgiving, dear?" she asked. I've missed one Thanksgiving in my whole life, I thought. Why is this year any different? My fiancé, Kurt, and I were planning to split our Thanksgiving between our two families. When I told my mother this, she worried that Mark and Marcy, my stepbrother and his wife, who will cook an 8-course meal from scratch, might be hurt if we didn't stay through the entire meal. When Kurt told his mom our grand plan, she balked. "How much time am I going to get to spend with you, honey?" she asked him. She even suggested that we stop and see her first, and that she accompany us back to New York after Thanksgiving. Feeling guilty, we did stop to see Kurt's mom at her apartment downtown before the Thanksgiving meal. What was supposed to be less than a 30-minute hello turned into an hour and a half of hurt feelings, tears, anger, and resentment. Why did we have to leave? Why? When we arrived at my stepbrother's house in the suburbs, the mood seemed quite festive. The ground was blanketed in bright orange and red leaves. The air was crisp. Rings of smoke were escaping the chimney. The front door was open, awaiting our arrival. We were late, of course. Inside, the air was also festive. Everyone was so happy to see us, everyone except my mother. She was obsessively focused on the fact that we'd be leaving again in an hour. Dinner was delicious, but after the main course was cleared, when Kurt and I stood up to say our goodbyes, my mother blurted, "Do you really have to leave now? You're going to miss dessert." "Not with Kurt's family," I thought, "not if we hurry." So we raced down the Schuylkill, sped to Rittenhouse Square, and ran down the street to the apartment building where we had been expected 2 hours earlier. When we knocked on the door, Kurt's Aunt Joan hugged and kissed us, proclaiming, "You're just in time for dessert." There were 5 different kinds of pies, plus chocolate cake, cheesecake, and cookies. My fiancé's family, most of whom I had never met, greeted us joyfully, but Kurt's mother barely gave us the time of day. After an hour or so, Kurt's mother announced that she was going home, only 2 blocks away, to grab her weekend bag for our trip back to New York. She'd return in 15 minutes. It was 11 p.m. 1.5 hours later, she was ready to go. Kurt spent the entire drive back apologizing to his mom for being late to Aunt Joan's. By the time we got to New York, it was after 2 a.m., and we were all exhausted. The next day, Kurt and I had to work. Kurt's mom entertained herself until we could all get together for dinner. But during an early yoga class, I dislocated my shoulder. I had to go to the emergency room, and Kurt insisted on going with me. Kurt called his mom to tell her we'd missed dinner. She freaked out, read Kurt the riot act, and announced that she was going back to Philadelphia. They didn't speak again for 3 months. Kurt proposed 6 weeks later. I said yes, provided we never had to split our Thanksgivings again.
Stephanie Hirsch is a producer here at The State of Things. She lives in Chapel Hill.